Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donna Dynasty. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty.
Diagnostic, popped it, now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, it is roll in a roll that I'm told, come a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the dynasty.
Diagnostic. Nastic.
Thanks for listening to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. Tune in every week for a thorough inspection of the dynasty landscape to learn how recent news affects your roster and to gather strategic tips and tricks to give your squad that turbocharged boost it needs. Please welcome your head technicians, Eitan Mosia and Sam Lane.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to the shop. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. My name is Eitan Mosia. You can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Eitan Mosia. I'm usually here with Sam Stompy Lane, who you can find at Stompy the Bear. He's not going to be able to join us today. The podcast gods have smited him, have turned off all the power at his house, so he is not going to be able to actually stream with us, but that's okay. That's all right. We got John, Jacob, Jingleheimer. I'm kidding. It's just Jay Moyer in the building. What's going on, man?
Ah, man, I love that intro. That's the best one I've heard on any of these podcasts I've been on. So, you know, happy to be here today. Going to have a lot of fun talking about some of these offenses. Looks like we're mostly going to hit the AFC North. So, yeah, man, just excited to get into it.
Absolutely, absolutely. People have said some positive things about intros in the past. I mean, it's one of the things that I pride myself on. I'm a know-nothing anyway, so I might as well be entertaining.
Yeah, I get the Jamie Moyer all the time, you know, the pitcher from the 90s, long career. I've never had the John Jacob Jingleheimer, though, man. That's a new one.
Hey, man, we got to keep them guessing. We got to keep them guessing. But, man, the whole world is starting to change right before us. Some of the big news, this is actually not even on the show sheet, so let me go ahead and start with that and just throw you off completely. But some of the big news that's happened recently, obviously, is we're kind of expecting the entire college football season to not be a thing that actually happens this year. I just wanted to ask you, Nyan, what are your thoughts on that? And how does that expect prospects like, for example, Joe Burrow, who had the opportunity to shine in that senior season, not really getting that opportunity anymore?
Yeah, you know, it's a shame, really, for those guys. I'm in the medical field, so, you know, I come at this from both having experience coaching, you know, playing. Not that I played, you know, even college ball at a high level or anything, but and then also having the medical aspect of it, you know, working in a hospital, et cetera. So, I mean, you know, everybody involved has a different perspective. For those players, you know, when you're a young man who's playing football, really there's nothing that you're more passionate about in your life in that moment. You know, most of these guys aren't married, don't have kids, don't have a job. So football is really the most important thing in their life. And, you know, it's a substantial loss for those players. So I do want to say that, and I do want to acknowledge that for those guys. And, you know, you brought up Joe Burrow, great example of someone who was able to really improve his draft stock with, you know, his final season in college. And you're right, some guys won't get that opportunity. The good news is there are a lot of guys who have distinguished themselves as underclassmen, you know, who will either be seniors this upcoming year or even juniors that may declare early. You may see a push of more guys who are going to be juniors now going back if there's no season. Hopefully we can at least get something going in the spring, you know, if they do cancel the fall season outright. But then, you know, getting back to the medical background that I have, I think that, you know, just where we are with this virus, it's a really tough proposition to really protect these guys. And, you know, they're amateurs, not getting paid like the players in the NFL who are typically making, you know, a couple million at least. So, you know, it's a bigger ethical question of, is it really worth it to throw these guys out here where the colleges are making, you know, hand over fist money off of broadcasts and potentially ticket sales, and, you know, the coaches are getting paid in the millions. How do you justify the ethics of that when you have amateurs who are putting themselves on the line, both on the football field, but then also the added threat of getting an infection? And, you know, the Big Ten was talking about they've had athletes that have myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart, and, you know, really unsure how that will play out over time. So getting sick, even if you don't end up in the hospital and, you know, the worst case scenario, dying from the illness in the first place, it is something that could potentially affect these guys for the duration of their careers and, you know, possibly end their sporting careers. So it's not, you know, not a simple solution. I wish that as a society we were in a better place with this virus. That's really, I think, the key to getting out of the dilemma we're in.
Yeah, no lies detected there at all. No lies detected. I mean, I have a heart murmur myself. I have sickle cell disease. I'm one of those parties who would be most affected by this. So guys potentially going back home and having to deal with siblings that have some of these issues, or guys that have some of these issues themselves, that's even an added risk that, I mean, you definitely need to factor into something that, again, is supposed to be an amateur sport. But it's really only amateur in a few ways here and there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the collegiate season. I do hope that we see it. I do also understand from the medical side of things that, I mean, ultimately it's a saving lives situation. So I think that needs to take priority really over everything. But let's now at least shift it a little bit to, I guess, something we have a little bit more hope of seeing more recently, which is the pro game, which is the NFL that we hope to see in about the next month or so. As of now, I mean, this time last year, this time in previous years, we would have already seen the Hall of Fame game. We would have already been into, I think, week two of the preseason, but that's not going to be the case this year. So we kind of just have to go with some of the stories that we're actually getting just, you know, on Twitter and amongst people that are talking about the sport right now. And one of the biggest stories, obviously, is with some of the COVID holdouts, we're seeing some added opportunities for some guys that we already projected highly, but could even splash more than we thought they would initially. I mean, first and foremost on that list is CEH on the Kansas City Chiefs. Obviously, with Damian Williams opting out due to COVID, depending on what you think of DeAndre Washington, it looks like everything's been cleared out for CEH at this point. I mean, Jonathan Taylor himself is a beast. He's behind one of the best offensive lines in football. He is an absolute monster from every perspective if you actually look at him as well. But, I mean, with me just describing the situation that CEH finds himself in now, is there even a debate between the two as when it comes to who is the value pick, who is actually going to provide the most value over the course of their careers to prospective dynasty owners that are looking to go ahead and draft one of these two guys with one of those first two top picks?
Yeah, man, a lot to unpack there. You brought up, you know, several great points for both of those guys, really, when you're talking about Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Jonathan Taylor. You know, anybody who is familiar with my work on Twitter knows how much I like Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He was my number one back before the draft. You know, even though I also love Jonathan Taylor, and I would say Jonathan Taylor is, you know, the better pure runner. If you're looking for, you know, a two down back who's going to run between the tackles, Jonathan Taylor is really special in that sense. and I can get into some of the reasons why later. But getting back to Clyde, the reason I had him at number one is just, you know, with where the pro game has gone in terms of the passing offense really being the driving force of most successful NFL offenses. You know, you look at his receiving skill, and it's not the production. So, you know, getting back to my process, I'm a film guy, so I really study, you know, how these guys play, not so much looking at the numbers or, you know, building models, etc. And, you know, he had 55 receptions, but it's really the way that he did it, and it's with really, you know, elite for a collegian route running. You know, he was unguardable by linebackers. LSU had him run option routes as, you know, a real staple of their offense, and he's pretty lethal. There's a highlight against Alabama that really stands out, where, you know, he puts the linebacker on roller skates, catches a pass over the middle, you know, hits a quick spin move on another linebacker coming across the middle, cuts back on another guy. So, you know, real elusive, great hands, great route running. You had Chris Ballard, GM of the Colts, talking about him, you know, in the same breath as Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara in terms of, you know, his route running and receiving skill. So that really gives you a window of insight into where I thought that he could bring value as well. And then when you talk about him landing in Kansas City, you know, it's just a hand in glove, you know, perfect scheme fit, because the Chiefs really obviously are built around Patrick Mahomes. Andy Reid is really, you know, at the forefront of offensive football. His scheme really spreads teams out, you know, both vertically down the field, but then also horizontally. And when you watch Damian Williams run, you know, there's a lot of missed opportunity there. He still produces because the boxes are so light. And, you know, teams have 5-6 guys in the box because Kansas City has all those weapons outside. You know, you have Reid scheming them up. But a lot of missed opportunities for Damian between the tackles. You know, he's really skilled, really an excellent runner in the open field, and if he can get outside. But, you know, his vision and decision-making between the tackles leaves a lot of room for improvement. And that's another area where I thought Clyde was really outstanding, you know, really executing concepts and really elite vision for a college runner. So he's a guy that I think could develop into, you know, you talk about sort of the best zone runners like Frank Gore. People that really know how to manipulate linebackers and create their own yardage, which, again, is something that Brett Veach talked about when they drafted him, was really his ability to create things for himself when it wasn't necessarily blocked. And he does that really by, you know, playing games with the linebackers. So, you know, for me, looking at him, I think the sky's the limit. You know, would I be shocked if he's the second or third highest scoring running back in fantasy this year? No, I would not. It comes down to the opportunity. We've had a weird offseason with rookies. I'm not worried about DeAndre Washington. He's going to be a good complimentary back, fits what they want to do. But, you know, fifth-round pick, never really took command of a question, you know, backfield with question marks in Oakland, now Las Vegas. So I think he's going to be the complement. You know, maybe there'll be more of a timeshare at the beginning, but eventually Clyde will take over and he's going to be seeing, you know, I think 10 to 15 carries a game. And then we're talking about 6, 7, 8 targets a game. So in that offense, that's really a chance to score a lot of points.
That's a really interesting point that you brought up, that one of the things that you liked most about CEH was actually his work between the tackles. I mean, everybody brings up what he's going to be able to do with his targets in Kansas City, given what Patrick Mahomes is, given what that offense is, given what Andy Reid is, as you've alluded to. But also saying that he really has the potential to be a three-down runner, I think, is one of those things that maybe gets overlooked a little bit when it comes to looking at what his potential range of outcomes is. I mean, speaking about range of outcomes, long ago, in what seems like a completely different world, before the time of Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, there was this runner that we've already mentioned named Kareem Hunt. In his rookie season, he was thrust into a starting role. He was pretty much given most of the opportunity in that Kansas City backfield because of injuries to Spencer Ware and Charcandrick West at the time. And he was able to compile 1,782 yards from scrimmage, 11 TDs. Are we looking at that type of production when it comes to what you expect out of CEH in year one, or is that kind of a unique scenario?
Yeah, so, I mean, Kareem Hunt is an interesting example because You know, again, this was before Mahomes was there, so this is when Alex Smith was their quarterback, but still had that same system and, you know, the playmakers outside that could really get teams spread out. And then when you talk about Kareem, he's a guy that really has, you know, some of the best contact balance in the NFL. So when he's out in the open field and there's one defensive back trying to tackle him, he's going to be able to break that tackle more often than not. And, you know, he came in, everybody's talking about how slow he is, and he's ripping off the most big play runs in the NFL that year, you know, his rookie season. And it was really because he got a lot of those one-on-one opportunities in the open field where he's really tough to stop. So when you talk about Clyde, I think the production potential is there, but I think it will look different. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is more, he's more of an elusive runner than, you know, a powerful one. He does have great leg drive, finishes runs. He'll pick up a couple yards, you know, when he's getting tackled by a linebacker or a defensive back, but not quite the same as Kareem Hunt, where he's just forcefully breaking tackles. So I think, you know, Clyde will have a little bit less rushing volume than Kareem did, a little more receiving volume, but it's going to be more downfield stuff. I really expect them to utilize him almost like a slot receiver as, you know, another, you know, real dangerous weapon in the passing game. And so you have Hardman, you have Tyreek really stretching defenses. You know, defenses have to pay a lot of attention to Kelce over the middle. So you're going to have Clyde really getting matchups with linebackers that have no chance to guard him. You know, so probably a little bit more slanted towards receptions and receiving yards. But I think that ceiling that we saw with Kareem is, you know, very feasible with Clyde.
Yeah, I mean, DeMarcus Robinson's gone. Obviously, Albert Wilson, who was the slot receiver formerly for that team before he got to Miami, he's gone as well. So I like what you're saying about the potential void that might be there for a guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who can find himself open at depth of targets between 5 and 15 yards at those intermediate targets and really, really add a dimension to that offense that we haven't seen, which is scary if you really think about it. So let's kind of take a trip across the NFL to another team that maybe has an offense that's slightly more muted than the one out in Kansas City by design, almost, though, because it seems like Pete Carroll and the offensive staff over there in Seattle want to play a certain way. They have Russell Wilson. They have probably one of the best quarterbacks of his generation. But this is also a team that over the past two seasons has run at a higher than 48% clip. Last season, in 2019, they ran at 48.2% of the time. The previous season, they ran the most in the NFL at the highest clip, over 55% of the time. This is a team that seemingly wants to be run-focused, even with all the wide receiver talent that is on that team. I think the one part and the one kind of hope for a lot of fantasy managers this year about the Seattle Seahawks was the simple fact that defense is lacking. That defense is very much asking. And if that was going to be the case, then they were just going to find themselves in game script situations where they were going to have to be forced to let Russ cook and let Russ cook early rather than in the fourth quarter to save them from maybe a deficit that they found themselves in because they were less aggressive than they might have been. So looking at all of that, I mean, with the addition, with the new addition to that Seattle Seahawks defense of Jamal Adams serving as Seattle's new Cam Chancellor at strong safety, is this a situation where we see that kind of take a step back and maybe we see this team do exactly what it's done in the past because maybe that defense might not be as underwhelming as we thought it would be in the first case?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at the Seahawks, it's really a case of, you know, why would they change? They've had some success, even with a defense that wasn't necessarily that, you know, good last year. But really, a lot of that success was, you know, Russell Wilson taking over once they needed him in the end. But when you're a coach and you're winning, you know, it doesn't necessarily provoke you to change your strategy. And so Pete Carroll's still there. You know, Schottenheimer's still there. I expect them to have the same offensive approach, really. And, you know, it's a shame because Russ, I would say, is the second best quarterback in the NFL behind Mahomes. And, you know, with DK Metcalf's continued development, at least, you know, as far as what we hope to see, you know, Tyler Lockett has really evolved into, you know, probably a top 20 receiver in the NFL. They really have some talent there. Added Greg Olsen. There's talk about, you know, potentially adding Josh Gordon or even a guy like Antonio Brown, who obviously would be suspended, to start the season. But you start talking about a bunch of guys that if everything falls right, they could have potentially one of the best receiving corps in the NFL. So you'd like to see them air it out a little bit more, and I think we all hope for that. But really, when I think about it, you know, from a cold, logical standpoint, I'm not really convinced they're going to change their offensive approach very much. And like you said, you know, if Jamal Adams does what they hope he can do and improve that defense, they may even be more heavily slanted towards the run.
A first-round pick in 2021, a first-round pick in 2022, and Bradley McDougal at safety was the draft haul that the Seattle Seahawks actually traded away for Jamal Adams. I mean, that seems like a lot to me, those two first-round picks for a safety that's normally not a highly coveted position, but it's Jamal Adams. I mean, if there is a safety to have, if there's a safety who's also a linebacker, who's so many different things for a team, it's also him. Do you think this was justified?
Well, you know, when you think back to that Legion of Boom defense, it was really built around their secondary and two really great safeties. When you think back to Earl Thomas and then the thumper, Cam Chancellor, who was really that hybrid safety linebacker role that they're hoping Jamal Adams can play. Jamal Adams is one of the best in-box safeties in the NFL. He's an excellent blitzer, very good in run as a run defender. So, you know, he really fits the prototype for what they're looking for. I'm not sure that in the end we'll look back and say two number one picks were justified, but it's a strong win now move. And if they think they have a shot to win a Super Bowl, and if they do win a Super Bowl, then, you know, it's worth it regardless of who or what those picks turn out to be.
My bad. We mentioned with Seattle that we're both kind of at the same point with this when it comes to what we expect this offense to be. This is a coaching staff, like you mentioned, has experienced success doing things the way it likes to do things. And if that's going to be the case, if DK Metcalf is going to be a thing, and he was certainly a thing very, very early in his career last year in his rookie season, and he's going to continue to develop, if this team is thinking about bringing in other receivers like Josh Gordon, getting him back from suspension, or Antonio Brown, I mean, when you look at Tyler Lockett, a 27-year-old receiver, kind of going into the last couple of years of his contract, I mean, I understand the connection that he has with Russell Wilson, but does this make you start to worry about him going forward?
I'm really not too worried about Tyler Lockett. When you look at quarterback wide receiver connections, you know, I think everybody would put Michael Thomas and Drew Brees at the top of the list. Those guys, you know, complete passes at a clip, really unseen in the NFL, really in the past decade. So they're at the top of the list. But then behind them, you know, it might be Tyler Lockett and Russell Wilson. Those guys are on the same page at every depth of the field. Lockett is an explosive player after the catch on the short routes, really excellent at tracking the ball. Russell Wilson is probably the best deep ball thrower in the NFL in terms of accuracy. So, you know, they're completing passes at, you know, a 75% rate. And it's not just, you know, little short passes underneath. There's some stuff deep down the field. So I think Lockett is one of the most efficient. He has been one of the most efficient receivers in the NFL. And, you know, his talent really backs up that production. So I think he is going to be, the guy who really drives the receiving core. It'll be interesting to see how defenses approach it, because if they treat DK Metcalf like the number one guy, he's playing more outside. Potentially, if he can draw a safety out on the middle of the field with Lockett working more in the slot, as he's more prone to do, then really we could see an even bigger year from Lockett. And I'm really looking forward to just how both of those guys work together their second year together, how defenses approach that. And, you know, Russ really – both of those receivers actually are really, really, paired well with his skill set in terms of being a deep thrower down the field.
Full agreement with you when it comes to kind of what's going on with Tyler Lockett. I mean, I love Tyler Lockett. I was a proponent of his last year. I do have some concerns about, you know, whether or not DK Metcalf becomes more of a threat to his targets, because I mean, oddly enough, he actually reached about 100 targets last year, which was 30% more than he's received in the last two previous years before that, because he usually got around 70 targets. So maybe we're seeing a regression back to 70 targets, but like you said, he's one of the most efficient wide receivers in the game. He's one of the most efficient wide receivers that we've seen for a long time, paired with one of the most efficient quarterbacks that we've seen in a long time as well. So even if 70 targets is the case for Tyler Lockett, I think he's going to do very, very well with those targets. But now we're going to quickly, before we move into what we were actually going to talk about today, I wanted to go ahead and seek out people that I wanted to consume their work on this show. One of the reasons that I consume your work, one of the reasons that I have a lot of fun with it is because it comes from a perspective that's outside of what I'm used to, outside of what I have experience in. I know you have some experience coaching. I wanted you to actually kind of share with us a little bit, maybe some of the position groups that you've coached, maybe some of the schemes that you're most familiar with, some of the experience that you have as a coach that maybe might not come as easy to people looking at this from a numbers perspective or just from a perspective outside of actually being on the gridiron and seeing how it's done.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, my coaching experience is at the high school level. So I coached high school football for 7 years back when I was in college, and then, you know, a few years thereafter, and really coached all across both the offense and the defense. So I've coached all positions on offense. Most of the years I spent was actually coaching offensive line. And so when you'll see, you know, my breakdowns on Twitter, where I look at run schemes and sort of how the running back is operating in those schemes, a lot of that scheme knowledge and, you know, the what the running back's keys are when he's reading the play come from that, you know, experience coaching the offensive line and putting together those run schemes. Also have some experience, you know, calling offensive plays as an offensive coordinator. I've actually called defensive plays, coached special teams. So really all across the field. And, you know, for me, I mean, football has just always been something I've been very passionate about since I was, you know, a very young kid. When I was 4 years old, I have a video of my dad asking me what I want to be when I grow up. And I say a football player, and he says, what position? And I say a linebacker. So, you know, that gives you some insight into how closely I was watching football from a very young age. But, you know, when I now no longer coach, but just really spend a lot of time, you know, consuming football again, because it's something I'm just really passionate about and addicted to, I guess. And so, you know, I try to really, with my content that I produce, you know, make it so people can really understand, you know, what I'm trying to say, and really, you know, help teach people a little bit more of the finer depth of football knowledge and how things work without getting too caught up in, you know, the lingo or the nitty gritty of the scheme that can sometimes be overwhelming and drive people away from that deeper analysis. So I try to make it as approachable as possible while still, you know, trying to get deep enough into stuff where it's, you know, trying to point out stuff that maybe you won't see every day, you know, on ESPN or what have you.
I love it. All right, then. So I'm going to put you on the spot. Ray Lewis or Brian Urlacher?
Oh, man, Ray Lewis is one of my favorite players of all time. So that's my boy. When I played football, I played linebacker. And it's funny because, you know, I was actually number 54, so I got that Urlacher number. But really, you know, there's no one who's more bad than Ray Lewis. So you think back to those Super Bowls where he's busting out, you know, the intro dance that will forever be, you know, the most famous dance in football, in my opinion. You know, a really ugly dance, but just the passion that he did it with made it special. So that's sort of Ray Lewis in a nutshell. That guy was just so passionate about what he was doing, and that's really why I, you know, gravitate towards him as being one of my favorite players of all time.
I love it. Now we have the perfect segue as well. I mean, we're going to go right to Ray Lewis's division for our 5-point inspection today, but we're not going to be talking about his team for the most part. We might say some things about Marquise Brown because it's hard for me to get through a podcast without saying some nice things about Marquise Brown, but we're going to try to hold on and wait until we get there. We're going to talk about the Cleveland Browns. So we're going to start at the top, and you just mentioned that you kind of have experience doing everything in the coaching world. So let's talk about this holistically. Let's talk about, like, each and every part, I guess, aside from some of the defense, of what we should expect to see from the Cleveland Browns this season. So The first thing that we're actually going to delve into is obviously a coaching change. It's a scheme change. It's going to change a lot of things about Cleveland. So drawing from looking at some of the data from the past season or so might not be completely indicative of what we're going to see moving forward, because Kevin Stefanski is the new play caller out there in Cleveland, is the new head coach out there in Cleveland. So I wanted to ask you, I mean, were you able to kind of catch on to some of the main differences between what Freddie Kitchens did and what we should expect Kevin Stefanski to do going forward into the 2020 season?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, first starting with Stefanski, so, I mean, you know, you never know what a guy's going to do until he gets there. So it would be nice to see, you know, how they're approaching it in preseason, all that stuff. We obviously won't get that opportunity, but, you know, you can look at where he comes from. And so with the Vikings last year, they were very successful enough to where, you know, he is now a head coach. So typically when people have success with a certain strategy, you don't change that strategy. Usually you change things when you're struggling or you feel like people are catching on. You know, they had a lot of success last year, really building their offense around Dalvin Cook and the wide zone, you know, outside zone run plays. So typically plays where they're, you know, aiming off the tackle, getting outside. And Dalvin is, you know, one of the best runners in the NFL doing that. Gary Kubiak really mentored Stefanski in installing that system. Obviously, Mike Zimmer is a guy who really wants to run the ball. So there's a question of how much of that, you know, run-pass ratio. The Vikings were the fourth most run-heavy team in the league, you know, regardless of situation. You know, how much was that driven by Zimmer? How much was that driven by Stefanski? But my inclination is because, you know, the success that Stefanski had, and now he's in this position where he has so many new things to learn, you know, what motivation does he have for changing his offensive system, changing that offensive philosophy that got him there? And I don't see a reason to do that, because when you start looking at personnel in Cleveland, it's really very close to what they had in Minnesota. So you don't have the personnel adjustment that would make a scheme change necessary either. And, you know, when we get back to, you know, how this will affect production, you know, you look back at Freddie Kitchens, what he did last year. And really the hallmark of Kitchen's scheme was that it really didn't, I don't know, it didn't, there was no unifying theme. There was no real philosophy, in my opinion. It was a lot of plays that were just seemed to be, you know, thrown together and randomly selected for what they were trying to do. So they would run, you know, a lot of spread shotgun stuff, some of the stuff that Baker was doing in college, you know, at Oklahoma with the air raid system there. But then they're, you know, trying to run two-back system, some power running game with Nick Chubb getting the ball, Kareem Hunt as a lead blocker. And Hunt is, a powerful runner, but he's not a fullback. You know, he's not a guy who's running through a hole and putting his hat on a linebacker. So that stuff that they were doing, you know, really was not well-suited to Kareem Hunt's skill set. You know, for me, I think that it'll be a run-heavy team that'll closely resemble what the Vikings do. And when I talk about, you know, the talent really matching Minnesota, I think that Kirk Cousins is probably the best comparison for Baker Mayfield. You know, not a guy like Patrick Mahomes who's going to be able to put a team on his shoulder, but a guy who's good enough, you know, sees the field well enough, is an accurate passer to where he can really execute a system if he's in a favorable spot. And so with the play action that they'll run a lot of, you know, bootlegs, I think Baker can really excel in that type of situation. And then you get to the receivers where you got Odell and Jarvis. You know, obviously that compares very similarly to Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. You know, talking about a guy in Odell and Diggs, guys in Odell and Diggs that can really, you know, excel at any depth of the field, really get deep, you know, excellent route runners, great tracking the ball, you know, can high point it. And then Thielen and Landry, who are really, really advanced route runners, you know, great separators underneath and in the intermediate zones. So, you know, again, perfect fit. And then they go ahead and they sign Austin Hooper to pair with David Njoku. And it's like, wow, you know, this really reminds me of Kyle Rudolph and Irv Smith. And then they bring in, you know, a run-blocking fullback to replicate what they had with C.J. Ham in Minnesota. And then even in the backfield, you know, Dalvin, I already mentioned, really an elite talent. I think Nick Chubb is in that same category, really an elite runner of the football. And then, you know, Minnesota had a very good backup who was a rookie in Alexander Mattison. Kareem Hunt is obviously more accomplished than Mattison is at this stage of his career. But again, you know, up and down the roster, it really, everything sort of fits. So I think it's going to be similar to what we saw in Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you made that comparison because, I mean, doing some prep for the show, I did the same thing. Just looking at personnel grouping frequency for me is a way to figure out what players are going to be on the field most often and what players are probably going to be in line to receive some of the most volume. So just looking at Stefanski over the last couple of seasons, back in 2018, he was more of an 11 personnel coach. That's what he did base. 68% of the time, the Minnesota Vikings ran 11 personnel. Now, that's not to say that he was even in power pretty much the full season, because he wasn't. He was the interim offensive coordinator after the coordinator before him was fired. So how much of this is him? I don't know. But I'm going to say that he had 68% of 11 personnel, and he actually only ran 12 personnel at 19%. I say only, but that was actually one of the highest percentages in the league of running 12 personnel. Last season, however, that 11 personnel percentage went from 68% to 25%. He ran 12 personnel 34% of the time, very close to the tops in the league, and he actually ran 21 personnel 21% of the time. So he was very much in favor of getting multiple RBs and multiple TEs on the field at the same time. Now it seems like he has the perfect personnel to be able to replicate that out in Cleveland with Kareem Hunt, with David Njoku, along with Austin Hooper, if he doesn't get traded. Obviously, you have Nick Chubb there. So taking the onus from Baker Mayfield and kind of taking some of it off his shoulders to go ahead and try to just be a solid team that's going to go out there and beat you 17-14 seems like something that the Cleveland Browns are actually very well suited to do this season. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, man, all day. I think that, you know, their defense is a bit underrated. You know, Myles Garrett, one of the best edge rushers. They're starting to build a bit of talent. You know, you talk about Denzel Ward, the early draft pick last year. So I think their defense could be better than people anticipate, and that will really allow them to run an offense that, again, you know, I just want to emphasize that when you talk about Stefanski and predicting what he's going to do, the offseason moves really speak to what Minnesota did in 2019. You know, you went back to that 2018, which was, you know, some great info there. And after the 2018 season, you know, during the season, they fired John DeFilippo because he was going basically too much 11 personnel, you know, too pass heavy. Mike Zimmer was not happy with it. They go ahead and draft Irv Smith, one of the best tight ends in the draft, come out, run, you know, a heavy dose of two tight end sets, you know, two running back sets with a true fullback. We're not talking about Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt. We're talking about Nick Chubb, you know, Andy Janovich, the fullback that they signed this offseason. Again, the offseason blueprint and the coaching philosophy all seem to point to hey, we're trying to really replicate what we did with the Vikings. And so for me, you know, that's very exciting for a couple players, less exciting for others, but I think we'll get into that here a little bit.
Absolutely, absolutely. I know you're super excited to talk about Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. I am as well. But we're going to talk about OBJ before we get there. Obviously, OBJ had one of the most disappointing seasons that we've seen recently from a star we've expected a lot of. Obviously, the change in teams is going to have some effect on production. From Scott Barrett's article some time ago on PFF, we actually saw that most of the time that is the case. Wide receivers changing teams tend to take a hit, but not necessarily a hit as big as what OBJ took last season. But, I mean, the fault isn't all his own. He was 88th in total target accuracy, which shows you that Baker Mayfield wasn't necessarily on the same page as OBJ most of the time. But he also had one of the worst catch rates of his career, only 55% catch rate. He was targeted down the field very often as well. He had a lot of volume and a lot of opportunity to make plays downfield with 1849 air yards, top three in the NFL, third actually ranked in the entire National Football League. So obviously he's extremely involved, but still he was only able to actually get a 0.57 racer, a 0.63 whopper, which again was the best on the team, but something that we don't expect from a talent like Odell Beckham Jr. However, I did mention that he had 1849 air yards. That was 38% of his team's air yards, which again is a very, very healthy mark, just showing you how much they intend to use him. Do you think we're going to see a lot more of that? Do you think we're going to see an increase in target quality, perhaps because of some of the play action that Stefanski is going to instill on this team moving into 2020?
Yeah, so a lot of moving parts here, obviously. Looking back at last year with the Browns, Freddie Kitchens' pass offense was really dysfunctional. Baker Mayfield was much more efficient. His rookie season, really regressed. And I think that's more of an indictment of Kitchens' scheme and, their overall approach as an organization than it is Mayfield. I think Mayfield is still the same guy. Again, not a guy who's going to drive your offense as a pass-heavy team, but good enough to take advantage of opportunities that are there. And then when you get to Odell Beckham's opportunity, he was targeted heavily last year, 133 targets, very inefficient, getting back to the advanced stats that you mentioned there. And so, I already compared him to Stephon Diggs and what Diggs did in Minnesota. And we look at 2018, the Vikings offense was pretty similar to what the Browns did last year in terms of, personnel groupings, passing percentage. And Diggs in 2018 had 149 targets, 102 receptions. So high volume, 1,021 yards, not too efficient. His yards per target was 6.9. 2019, when they went more run heavy, deep play action passing, Diggs' target volume was cut by a third. So, he had 94 targets last year, down from 149. He actually had more yards in 2019 than he did in 2018, despite having so many fewer targets. 1,100 plus yards last year. His yards per target nearly doubled to 12 yards per target. So I think what we can expect from Odell, who I think is in a very similar skill set category to Diggs, those guys are, I don't know, if you had to pick two, they're a guy that was as similar to Odell in the league, it's probably Diggs. So very similar skill set, same scheme. I think Odell's target volume will decrease, but I think his production will, potentially increase. For sure, he will be much more efficient in terms of yards per target, taking advantage of what will be more limited opportunities, mostly off play action.
Yeah, I mean, look, Diggs is a goddamn chameleon. You just perfectly illustrated it when you mentioned his average depth of target in 2018 versus his average depth of target in 2019 and still pointed out that in 2019 he got more yards than he did with all those targets the previous season. But that just shows how excellent he is at finding separation, at getting open, at all target depths, which I think is the most important thing. He can do anything required of him. He's not going to be set in one specific area of the field, which I think, and we can kind of talk about this in a moment, might be something that the Browns struggle with this year, with having David Njoku and Austin Hooper and Jarvis Landry essentially competing for targets in the same location. Odell Beckham Jr. will be able to kind of paper over some of those cracks because he's a guy that can win anywhere on the field. So I definitely do like how you made that comparison. But let's move on from Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, I think we should both expect for him to have a better season than we've seen just because we expect the offense to be better than we've seen. But if it's going to be a run-heavy offense, I mean, that in itself leads you to think that this might be a situation where we just don't necessarily see the same level of greatness that we saw in Odell's early Giants career. I'm just hoping that he can stay healthy this year. I actually think that's the most important thing. But, I mean, let's kind of go on to – let's talk about Austin Hooper. Obviously, there's kind of two diametrically opposed sides of Austin Hooper fandom. You either accept that Austin Hooper was a product of the Atlanta offense and think that he might not necessarily be in the same class to command as many targets on this Browns offense with all those other receivers on the field, with David Njoku potentially backing him up if he's still on the team as well. Or you find yourself in the other bucket, in the other camp, and you believe that Austin Hooper is an exceptional talent and targets are going to follow him wherever he goes. What bucket do you find yourself in? Do you think Austin Hooper is going to really be a value for drafters that really think that he's going to be as good as he was in Atlanta in Cleveland?
I'm very skeptical of Austin Hooper this year. Again, and it really gets back to, you know, projecting their offense given the lens of, Stefanski coming in and running what I think, again, because of all those things we mentioned, will look very similar to what they did in Minnesota. And, you know, some of these personnel usage patterns, you know, we don't get the opportunity to see what they're doing in the preseason, which is very useful. But, you know, Kyle Rudolph and Irv Smith Jr. both sort of split the receiving load last year in Minnesota, and neither one of those guys saw really enough targets to be fantasy relevant. You know, both of them were right around three targets per game. Both of them were in the 300s in terms of receiving yards. Rudolph had a few more touchdowns. But, you know, if David Njoku buys in and they envision running a lot of 12 personnel, I think those two guys, and, you know, they also drafted the rookie Harrison Bryant, and we'll see what their plans are for him. But it could potentially be a three-headed monster rotation at tight end. That said, Austin Hooper will be the guy who gets the most snaps out of all those guys. You know, they paid him at the top of the market in terms of tight ends. So they have big plans for him. I'm just not necessarily convinced that those big plans include, you know, the type of target volume that we're used to seeing from Hooper in Atlanta. And when you watch Hooper play, you know, he's a very solid player. You know, can catch the ball well, has a good feel for zone coverage, but he's not a Gronk, you know, not Travis Kelce, who's really going to demand those targets if they're not sort of built into the offense. So if they're a low-volume passing team and their defense holds up and, you know, they're only attempting 30 passes a game or what have you, with, you know, Odell and Jarvis being their top two targets, Hooper splitting the attention of other tight ends, you know, I don't think that he has a ton of volume coming his way, and I think he's a player that really needs the volume to really justify, you know, where he's being picked right now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, look, if you like Austin Hooper, fine. I totally get it. Austin Hooper was a guy who was just manufacturing fantasy points last season, but you also have to understand that on the Atlanta offense, Austin Hooper received 18.5% of the total targets in an offense that was extremely pass heavy because they were down most of the time. That defense was decimated most of the time. Matt Ryan was trying to bring that team back most of the time. On top of that, Austin Hooper received 25.7% of the end zone targets on that team. They were focusing on him in the end zone in a way that I don't necessarily think we're going to see in Cleveland, because I think they're going to be running when they get closer to the end zone. I think they're really going to have an emphasis on trying to just pound the rock when they're near the goal line, when they're at the goal line. I think that's what we're going to see. So it's just going to be tough for Austin Hooper to return value if you're expecting him to be anything like he was in 2019. David Njoku, whether or not he gets a trade, also adds into that. What do you, or how do you rate the chances of David Njoku actually getting the trade he requested off the team? Do you think this is something that the Browns entertain, or do you think that, like we were saying before, Kevin Stefanski kind of sees a direct parallel to what he had before and he just kind of wants to keep the train moving?
My hunch is that they really want to have two good tight ends. And the reason I say that is because, and you know, maybe David Njoku isn't one of those tight ends they plan on being, you know, one of those two tight ends. But they signed Hooper and they drafted Harrison Bryant relatively early. And so they really bulked up at the tight end position. You know, again, came from a situation where they're running two tight end sets, you know, at the top of the league in terms of frequency. So I think there's going to be a lot of snaps for tight ends. And if David Njoku buys in and can progress, you know, he will have a real opportunity there for playing time. So hopefully we get some word as, you know, training camp progresses as to what the rotation's looking like there. But, you know, he could be a guy who potentially, you know, is on par with or even outproduces Austin Hooper if things break right for him in his development.
Yeah, I'm 100% on that same pathway as you. But the Browns did massively improve that offensive line this season. If we're expecting this team to be run heavy, and it sounds like from both of our conversations, we both have the inclination that this team is going to be run heavy, then we have to look at this offensive line and start to drool a little bit. Obviously, Dredrick Wills drafted in the 2020 draft. Jack Conklin through free agency was another addition. Andy Yanovich, you already mentioned. I'm a Bronco fan. He was formerly on the Broncos. Love the dude. Going to be a good lead blocker in Cleveland. I mean, there's two guys in that Cleveland backfield, obviously, in Kareem Hunt and in Nick Chubb. We would expect Nick Chubb to get the majority of the workload here. I mean, is there a ceiling for these running backs in Cleveland with what we should expect and from what we've seen from Stefanski with Dalvin Cook in Minnesota?
Yeah, so when you look back to what they did with Dalvin, over the first 10 games of the season, he was averaging over 20 carries per game. Really was, at the top of the market in terms of running backs before he hurt his shoulder. And, Dalvin is a guy who's a little bit slight of frame, has had some injury troubles throughout his career. Nick Chubb, he had the bad knee injury in college, sort of a freak accident, but since then has been, very sturdy. He's one of the more powerful guys in the NFL, is good at not taking a ton of punishment despite running with power, just the way that he takes on tacklers, sort of shifting his body and getting more indirect than direct contact. So I think he's really a guy that could be a bell cow. And, if Stefanski wants that type of guy, what he did with Dalvin. And, again, they had a talented backup in Madison. And even Mike Boone behind Madison is also a very talented runner. That really made Dalvin the bell cow despite having good guys, to spell him. So if we're looking at Chubb getting, 20 carries a game, you already mentioned the improvements along the offensive line with both Conklin coming in and the early draft pick, really a system that fits Nick Chubb's skill set really well, talking about that outside zone running scheme, the one cut and go. Nick Chubb is one of the most explosive backs in the NFL, and you get him out there against a defensive back, much like Kareem Hunt, he's going to break that tackle more often than not. But the difference between Chubb and Hunt is Chubb is just so much more explosive than Kareem Hunt is. So really a perfect fit. I think he's going to be used heavily in the ground game. The question from a fantasy perspective is, how much is he going to get in the passing game? And I think Kareem Hunt, really, if you're looking at his game, that's probably the best thing that he brings to the table is his work as a receiver. And again, being a player who can operate in space, break tackles, pick up chunk yardage that way. So I do think that Hunt will limit the PPR ceiling, from a fantasy perspective of a guy like Hunt, of a guy like Chubb. But I think Chubb will get, the vast majority of the rushing work. And really, again, talking about guys that could win a rushing title, he's on the short list, right up there with Derrick Henry. I'd probably say those are the two guys I think would be most likely to lead the league in rushing yards.
So you're just completely unwilling to entertain the fact that, because we've seen such success from a guy like Kareem Hunt in the past, albeit on a different offense, that he's not going to be any threat to the workload on the ground of a Nick Chubb moving forward?
No, man, I'm willing to entertain anything. in these types of situations, new coach, a lot of moving parts, questions about how good the defense is going to be. It's hard to predict, but if I had to put my money down on one thing, that's what it would be. Not saying that Kareem Hunt, won't play a significant role. I think he will have a significant role in the offense, but I think a lot of it will be, third down back, maybe an occasional series here or there, less heavily involved in the ground game. I when I worked through my projections, had Nick Chubb getting about, 3.5 to 4 times as many carries as Kareem Hunt, but Kareem Hunt, out-targeting him by a significant margin. So I think there's room for both. I am not saying this with any degree of certainty. It's just reading the tea leaves of the things they've done in the offseason and, trying to really offer that foresight from, a scheme, coaching, talent fit perspective to say this is what I think is most likely to happen, but definitely acknowledging that there are different ways that it could shake out.
I don't know if I'm all the way there with you, but my co-host would be proud. I can certainly say that Stompy is right on board with your Nick Chubb take, and I love it. All right, so let's just look at this team holistically. Let's take everything kind of as we see it. Obviously, we're going to see a little bit of a rebound from the Pittsburgh Steelers. That defense is really something to be feared now with the addition of Minkah Fitzpatrick on that team. Obviously, we're going to get hopefully a healthy Ben Roethlisberger back, and that means good things for that offense. We expect the Ravens to lead this division, I think, unless we're going to have some words here in a moment. But yeah, with Lamar Jackson, with Mark Andrews, Marquise Brown, with what we've seen from that team is in the rushing game, what Gus Edwards was able to do. J.K. Dobbins is probably going to be taking that role now. So I just expect that team to keep rolling. With these other two teams in tow, I'm just not even going to mention Cincinnati. I'm sorry. I love you, Tyler Boyd. That's about all I love in Cincinnati. Joe Mixon, maybe. How would you rate the chances of the Browns making the playoffs in 2020?
Yeah, I mean, you know, 2020 is going to be a weird year because I think a lot of it comes down to how these coaches adapt. And I think when you have a new coach coming in, having to install his whole system with no real offseason program, it puts them at a big disadvantage. I do really love their offseason. I think that they had a really, you know, common sense approach to what they're doing in terms of building up the offensive line, you know, the tight ends, the running back room. So I think they're really a team, you know. I also mentioned their defense earlier, who could surprise some people. Obviously, Baltimore, you know, they're one of the best teams in the NFL, and I'd be shocked if that's any different this year. So I'm right there with you, you know, big fan of Lamar. I think their skill talent really fits him very well. Talking about Andrews, and, you know, Dobbins is really an explosive open field player who I think, you know, will be a big upgrade for them in the backfield because they create a lot of rushing lanes, and if you can get that guy some space, you know, he's lethal. So definitely would put you know, them as the favorites. But then between, you know, Pittsburgh, Cincy, I would not be surprised at all if Cleveland is, you know, pushing for second in the division and you know, earning a wild card spot in the playoffs.
Yeah, I definitely do think that's within the range of outcomes. I don't know if they're going to be an offensive powerhouse. I do think they're going to be run heavy, like you mentioned, but that defense has definitely improved, and that offensive line has improved to the point where I think they're strong enough to be contenders for that wild card spot for sure.
I think a lot of it comes down to Ben Roethlisberger's arm, you know, his elbow. How close is he to the Big Ben we knew when we last saw him on the football field? If he's back to normal, Pittsburgh's going to be tough to beat. But, you know, I have my doubts. He had, you know, major elbow surgery last season. So, you know, another thing that would be nice to see before the season kicks off. But I guess we'll find out week one how Big Ben's looking.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's the late round quarterback, darling, I guess, kind of this year that people are taking chances on, kind of along with Cam. I think both of those guys, it's just an issue of health. If health is there, then we expect to see a lot. But, I mean, health is obviously a question mark. But that is going to be the end of this week's 5-point inspection. And we're going to move on to what the people want and why the people are here in the first place. And what they want is a dynasty diagnostic. So I'm going to go ahead and let you know how this works. Essentially, we're going to take in a viewer or a listener submitted team, kind of go down the list and make some recommendations on maybe what we would do if this was our dynasty squad and we were trying to make sure that we could compete as soon as possible and have a window that's open for as long as possible. So the team that we're actually looking at this year is pretty stacked. It's a pretty stacked team. I'm going to give you a heads up. We might not have a lot to say on what to actually change on this roster, but we're going to definitely take a stab at it. The team was submitted by Omar Doze. Go ahead and follow him on Twitter. And it's a Superflex team. but it's a roster that's not built for a super flex team, and you'll see that in a minute. At quarterback on this roster, we have Lamar Jackson. At running back, we have Nick Chubb, Alvin Kamara, Austin Eckler, Devin Singletary, and Darwin Thompson. At wide receiver, we have Julio Jones, Cooper Kupp, Adam Thielen, Deebo Samuel, DJ Chark, and Darius Slayton. And at tight end, we have Hunter Henry and Irv Smith Jr. So we're going to start at the top. Obviously, quarterback Lamar Jackson, I mean, he's a top two quarterback in the league, I think, at this point, just because of his rushing ability paired with his passing ability. I think it's not out of the range of possibilities that he finishes quarterback one over Patrick Mahomes this year. And then I would actually put Dak at quarterback three, but that's neither here nor there. You can debate with me to the ends of the earth about whether or not.
I'm right there with you, man.
Perfect.
I'm right there with you.
So, but with Lamar Jackson sitting there alone, obviously I mentioned this is a super flex league as well. I mean, what type of quarterback are you looking to pair with Lamar Jackson that you think gives you the best value at cost?
Well, some guys that I really like, later on, Drew Lock, I think. You know, when he took over in Denver last year, he had that one big game against Houston. But other than that, you know, his production was pretty muted. He was, you know, fewer than 210 yards in his other four starts. He did lead them to a 4-1 record, you know, avoided too many turnovers. But when you watch their offense, I think a lot of the struggles in terms of production really went back to these guys had Cortland Sutton, a rookie Noah Fant, and after that, it was really a bunch of receivers that didn't belong on an NFL field. Deshaun Hamilton and Tim Patrick.
Don't talk about Tim Patrick.
I mean, these guys, you know, no disrespect. You know, any NFL player is a beast. Let's just get that out of the way. But in terms of, you know, being able to separate, being a starting caliber NFL player, they didn't really have that other than Sutton, in my opinion. And even Fant, you know, really was just, he's just very raw, very green. And I expect him to develop, but last year it just wasn't there in terms of having guys that could consistently separate. You add Jerry Jeudy, you add KJ Hamler. For my money, you know, two of the best separators in the NFL draft this year at receiver. And now you start talking about they have that, you know, dominant physical possession receiver in Sutton. They have Hamler who can really stretch a defense, create separation with his speed, but also his route running technique, his ability to sense leverage by defenders. And then Jerry Jeudy, you know, his ability to stop is really up there with any receiver you watch run routes. This guy can stop on a dime, and that's really an effective trait for creating separation. So the weapons are there. You know, Fant, I already mentioned, I expect him to progress. He's really an athletic freak where if you give him some space in the open field, we saw last year he had several explosive plays. They brought in Melvin Gordon, who's really, head and shoulders above any receiving running back they had last year. I think Philip Lindsay's, his superior as a rusher, but Melvin Gordon is way better as a receiver. And they tried to throw to the back a lot last year and just didn't really have a guy that could convert on those. You know, they're throwing to Devontae Booker, they're throwing to Royce Freeman. And it's just not looking too good out there. But Melvin should solve that problem. So I think there's really a great opportunity for Drew Lock to really surprise some people and produce in the top 10 to 15 range at quarterback this year.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that take, not just because I'm a Bronco fan. I just think that there's so many weapons at so many different parts of the field I don't even think Drew Lock has to be that good to be good. You know, I think that he's going to be throwing to open receivers more often than not. And you didn't even mention Alberto Guegunam, who's behind Noah Fine, who's crazily athletic as well. I mean, the skill position talent on the Denver Broncos is something that I would say is probably a top five skill position group in the NFL at this point when you take it all collectively. So I think that's something that's definitely going to benefit Drew Lock moving forward. As for other quarterbacks to target, maybe in that range that might not cost a lot but could definitely give you value. I think Cam's definitely going to be there. I would also say that I think Matthew Stafford is somebody that goes overlooked every year as well. And I think if you're willing to kind of take the risk, I think Tua Tagovailoa or Justin Herbert, if you happen to be able to maybe find somebody who has needs elsewhere, could be someone that you might have to pay a little bit extra for, but should be effective this year and moving forward. You're going to say something really quickly, though. Go ahead.
Yeah, man, I got one more for you, and hear me out on this one. But we're going to stay in the AFC West. You know, you already mentioned Herbert, so I'm not going to go there. But I'm talking about Derek Carr and the Raiders. you know, not so with Locke. You know, I went through that whole spiel. Didn't even mention his talent. I think that guy is a very talented quarterback. You know, his arm talent is elite. He showed some things processing the field last year that got me very excited. You know, did some breakdowns on Twitter. So if you guys are on there, you can go ahead and find those on my feed. But Derek Carr, you know, I'm more just excited about the offense. They really have a special offensive line. They added Henry Ruggs, adds an explosive element to their offense that they haven't had. You know, Hunter Renfrow is an effective slot receiver, but then Tyrell Williams coming back healthy, another field stretcher there. Obviously, drafted Bryan Edwards, who fell a little bit because of injury concerns, but really is a tough, physical, you know, possession receiver who's also very good at, you know, running routes and creating that short intermediate separation. So the receiving core, you know, has a lot of talent now. And then you get to Darren Waller, who I think is, you know, top five receiving tight end in the NFL. The guy's big, fast, can do it all in terms of route running, run after the catch, you know, a physical player. So I really like the talent. Third year in Gruden's system. I could see this defense really being terrible, you know, as they have been for a long time. So there's the potential there, even though Gruden really wants to run the ball, that they'll have to air it out a bit. And if they do, you know, he's a guy that nobody's really excited about ever, and I'm not necessarily excited about him as an individual talent either. But, you know, I think the production could really be there.
Yeah, I mean, at cost, definitely. You want to invest in quarterbacks that have skill position groups that can kind of get them over the hump, and I can see where you're going with that. My only fear is, I mean, I think we might see a Wally Pipps situation in Las Vegas. They have Marcus Mariota, who essentially is Derek Carr all over again, but they have him on the bench just behind Derek Carr, and we just saw what happened to Marcus Mariota last year on the Tennessee Titans. I think this might be a situation where we see the same thing kind of repeat itself, except Marcus Mariota now becomes starter in Las Vegas. So that, if anything, is the risk with Derek Carr. But, I mean, investing in a solid skill position group, I can definitely see why you would at least have your eye on the Raiders to some respect.
Yeah, I definitely want to emphasize that, you know, if I'm talking about ranking quarterbacks, these guys aren't at the top of my ranks, but it's really just who can outperform, you know, the conception of them as reflected by their ADP. So I think those are two guys that if things fall the right way, you know, could potentially be that good complementary piece to what he already has there in Lamar. And, you know, cheaper to add than some other guys.
Man, you know, I don't know if the shot song was by the Yin Yang Twins. I forget it, but the song that just goes shot, 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 shot all over again. For me, it's basically cost. When looking at guys like Derek Carr, when looking at guys that, again, if you're ranking them, you have them in a certain bucket. But if you already have Lamar Jackson on the squad, you just need a warm body that's going to be able to kind of get you through some of the hard times. And Derek Carr is definitely somebody that can do that for you. But let's now move on to the running back group that we have featured here. And I told you this team was stacked, sir. I was not lying. Nick Chubb, Alvin Kamara, Austin Eckler, Devin Singletary, Darwin Thompson. I mean, what are we doing with this running back group? Also, we have to understand that we are still dealing with a quarterback group that doesn't have two quarterbacks in a superflex league. So one of these guys might have to be moved. I mean, between Nick Chubb, Alvin Kamara, Austin Eckler, Devin Singletary, Darwin Thompson, I mean, who would you move in that area that you think is going to give you the value to really get a quality starter back, if there's anybody that you're going to move?
I mean, for me, of those guys, you know, I'm not sure if you mentioned the format. Is this a, you know, PPR league or a...
Yep. This is a PPR league, super flex, no real special rules. So, yeah, everything you would normally assume.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm standing pat on those three running backs. For me, those are three of the top, you know, seven PPR backs in terms of when I look at my projections. So I'm staying put with Chubb, Kamara, Eckler. I think Eckler and Kamara really, you know, in terms of receiving volume, they're going to be up at the top of the list for targets this year. But I would move on from Singletary because I think that, you know, he had a pretty good rookie year. I think he's thought of as being an up-and-coming player. But obviously they drafted Zach Moss. And when you're talking about, you know, from a fantasy production standpoint, Moss is definitely, at least in my opinion, the better receiver. You know, very similar to Kareem Hunt in that way where he's a bigger guy, not too explosive, but, you know, excellent route runner, catches the ball very comfortably, and can really break tackles, you know, at a very high rate. So you get him in the ball in the open field, and, you know, good things will happen. So he'll get most of the passing game work, I assume. And also, you know, he's a big, powerful runner. So Singletary, who's, you know, one of the smaller backs in the league, is very likely to lose some red zone, some goal line touches to Zach Moss. And so, you know, in PPR, what you want are targets and touchdowns. So for me, I think Zach Moss is going to be the more valuable player. But, you know, Singletary is currently going ahead of him typically in terms of ADP. So if you can get something valuable, you know, on that, you know, Derek Carr, Drew Lock spectrum, that's something that I would do all day for Singletary.
Yeah. I mean, he might still have some trade value, definitely. But I think that was kind of the issue with Singletary. He's a smaller back. But he's not a smaller back who's particularly athletic, who's particularly twitchy when it comes to just looking at his burst score, looking at the athleticism scores compared to some of his contemporaries. So I think that might be the issue, that along with Zach Moss, if he's not finding himself in those situations, in those high-value situations, catching the ball and getting the ball in the red zone or at the goal line, then he might be one of those guys to kind of fall off the way a little bit here. Let's move on to the next position group, wide receivers on this team. And the wide receivers are about as stacked as the running backs: Julio Jones, Cooper Kupp, Adam Thielen, Debo Samuel, DJ Chark, and Darius Slayton. Is any one of these guys fool's gold, do you think, this year that you might be able to get a good deal on right now if you pull the trigger?
I think that Darius Slayton is a guy that, you know, there's a lot of positive buzz about. You know, really produced at a outstanding pace last year as a rookie. So I think people assume, you know, that he's going to take that next step. But when you watch their offense on film, when they have all their guys, you know, Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate, Darius Slayton, Evan Ingram, and again, these guys, for different reasons, were on and off the field, so they weren't typically all on the field together. But, you know, when those three starting receivers were all out there together, you know, Slayton was being targeted behind both Shepard and Tate. You know, you add a healthy Evan Ingram into that, and I think that there's potential that for Slayton to lose a significant number of targets and really be, you know, the third or fourth option on that team. And, you know, losing Pat Shurmur, who I do think is a very good offensive coordinator in terms of designing a passing game. You know, he made the passing reads, you know, pretty easy on Daniel Jones and really a system that fit him very well. And it's sort of a wild card with how that's going to work out now, you know, with the head coaching change, you know, offensive system change, and whether they'll be able to replicate that same success, you know, coming in and really having, you know, their coach install the Patriot way. So he's a guy that I think, you know, while he's talented in terms of being able to work down the field, you know, and go up and get the ball, that he may not see the volume that really justifies, you know, the hype for him as a young rookie receiver in a dynasty league.
Is it worth trading Julio Jones or Adam Thielen at this point? Obviously, Julio Jones is the older of the two. Adam Thielen, we expect to get all the targets in the world that Devontae Adams doesn't get in the NFL season come 2020. I mean, is there a situation where you would entertain trading either of those assets in a dynasty league, understanding that their age is obviously going to bring the price down a bit?
Yeah, I mean, if I were rebuilding and I had those guys on my roster, but, you know, looking at who he has, or she, I don't know, you know, he or she, whatever, I didn't catch his name, but, you know, his roster is really stacked, so I wouldn't really be concerned about age at this point. You know, he's in win-now mode. I wouldn't get rid of Julio or Thielen unless you're really upgrading a starter on your team. You know, if he's really trying to add a second elite quarterback, maybe someone like Dak, you know, then I could see putting together a package where he's trying to offer up one of those guys just because he has such great depth, you know, through his roster. So if he's trying to upgrade a starter, I could see it. But I wouldn't move on just to move on.
Sound advice, people out there. Listen up. At tight end, Hunter Henry and Irv Smith Jr. These are the two tight ends that we have to deal with. My issue with Hunter Henry is the same issue that I kind of have with Austin Eckler, and I was waiting to get to this point before I kind of circled back to it. Tyrod Taylor and Justin Herbert, both of these guys are quarterbacks that are going to look at their deepest read first. They're quarterbacks that are looking to throw it deep, and because Tyrod Taylor is mobile, if it's the decision between taking off 4 or 5 to 10 yard gain versus dumping it off 4 or 5 to 10 yard gain, we've seen in the past that he's more likely to take off. So do you have any concerns about the guys that are going to be at lower target depths out in Los Angeles between Hunter Henry and Austin Eckler? Do you have any concerns about their value this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned about the Chargers passing offense in general. I do think that Eckler will see a pretty substantial target volume just because he's such a skilled player in terms of running routes, and then also, you know, as an open field runner where he's really good at breaking tackles and, you know, very evasive. So for me, I think Eckler's, you know, a lock to see at least 80, 90 targets in that range, which, you know, for running backs, he's going to be at the top, up near the top of the list, which is huge in a PPR league. Hunter Henry, you know, when you start thinking about Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Hunter Henry, you know, these are all guys that work the same depth of the field. And we've touched on that a lot in this podcast, really having those guys with those different skill sets. And, you know, it sort of becomes a bit redundant. And so when you're switching quarterbacks, there's a lot of, you know, mystery as to how that will play out. But really, I think what Anthony Lynn wants to do, and with their defense, you know, they have a lot of talent on defense. So if their defense really comes together, you know, hasn't quite happened yet, didn't happen last year, and they're playing, you know, sound defensive football, I think Anthony Lynn really wants to run the ball. And I think they'll have a bit of a three-headed monster in the backfield, you know, in terms of adding in Justin Jackson, Joshua Kelly for some of that groundwork. But, you know, they added Trey Turner, one of the best guards in the NFL, and I think they're going to really try to run the ball, play defense. So for me, I think Keenan Allen will get target volume. I don't think it'll be that efficient. I think Mike Williams and Hunter Henry are going to cannibalize each other a little bit in a low-volume passing offense. But I still feel comfortable with Austin Eckler there.
What about Irv Smith? Is the breakout coming this year, and is he the type of guy that would make you comfortable enough to perhaps – think about maybe getting out from under Hunter Henry while you can?
I mean, I think Irv Smith is a very talented player. In terms of whether I think he'll break out this year, a lot of it gets back to that system stuff we talked about. You know, low volume passing attack. They don't have digs to stretch the field. I think they could really struggle to move the ball through the air this year. But, you know, potentially the target volume could increase because of that, and losing digs, and, you know, being, you know, not quite as efficient on offense. Maybe they're playing behind, from behind a little bit more and have to throw it a little bit more often. But I think in terms of, you know, long-term development, he's really a guy that could, you know, become a top 10 tight end in the NFL. You know, really a smart, heady receiving tight end. You know, good red zone target, really good at creating separation. So he's a guy that I really like long term. You know, if you're talking about trading one of those receivers, I could see going for an upgraded tight end, you know, putting a package together involving Henry, because I do think that he's a guy that has, you know, big name, holds some value. So if you really want to upgrade and get a guy, you know, one of those elite tight ends, you know, maybe even go for Kelce or Kittle or something like that, that's something I could see.
All right. So now, ladies and gentlemen, comes our moment of truth. This is called the Dynasty Diagnostic. You are in the service center, Mr. Jay Moyer, and we are working on this automobile. So in car terms, in your best car terms, how would you describe this roster? How would you describe this team? What is it to you?
Man, I'm not a car guy. I have a car.
You're in the right place.
I work in a hospital, so I'm very comfortable with diagnosis, but it's a different kind of diagnosis. You know what I mean? But no, man. I mean, this looks like this thing's revved up, ready to go. In my opinion, obviously it needs a second quarterback, but you know, I don't know how you would analogize that for a car. Maybe it's missing one of its four wheels or something. But you know, if you can even slap a functional spare tire on there, the rest of the car is so nice that this thing's going to go pretty fast.
I love it. I wouldn't even say this one is a car to me. We're working on a goddamn jet plane. This is an F-22 fighter that we have here, and you are ready to go ahead and just blow away the competition, figuratively, literally, all of the ease. You are ready to do it with this competition. And this is a crazy, crazy stack roster. It was a blast to go ahead and take it apart with you. And now I just want to turn it over to you to go ahead and give the people some insight on what you got going on, what you got moving forward. I know you do some work with the FF Astronauts now. I know you've also done some work with Matt Waldman at the RSP Film Room. Tell us all what you're about.
Yeah, so I actually recently joined up with the Fantasy Football Astronauts. That's ffastronauts.com. Also can find us at the FF Astronauts YouTube channel. There's also a podcast that I'm not directly involved with, but various platforms, do a lot of work on Twitter. The stuff I'm working on now, you know, I went through all of these teams, put together projections, so busy getting ready to put content out for draft season, you know, talking about, you know, top 10 lists, you know, people who are overvalued, undervalued, you know, based on the research I did for my projections, which again gets back to a lot of stuff we talked about here, which is really focused on, you know, talent and scheme fit and using that to really project how things are going to play out. So in addition to that, you know, I always have my video breakdowns, been working on some stuff with quarterbacks, working actually on a piece on Drew Locke right now, which will be up over at the YouTube channel, you know, sooner rather than later. But yeah, man, those are the platforms. My Twitter handle is @JMoyerFB, as in football. So you can find me on all those platforms.
Love it. Really quickly, can I ask for a little bit of a teaser? I mean, is there some guy in your projections that just maybe ranks a lot lower than the consensus would expect, or perhaps a lot higher?
Yeah, so I mean, one guy that I am always lower on the most, and maybe you're aware of this, most people are, is Miles Sanders.
I'm here for this.
So I become, you know, a broken record at this point, I guess, but just a guy, when I study him on film, you know, really seems more in line with an average talent at best. You know, not necessarily his physical talent. He's very physically talented. He's an explosive player. But just his vision between the tackles, his decision-making as a runner, you know, has a lot of inefficiencies with his footwork. And then really struggles defeating tacklers, you know, very often goes down on first contact, doesn't have a ton of different moves that he can do to win, you know, sort of has a jump cut and that's about it. And then even his receiving skill, I think people think of him, you know, I've heard comparisons to Christian McCaffrey, and I think that is, you know, honestly somewhat insulting to McCaffrey, because McCaffrey's one of the best route runners in the game, you know, regardless of position. And when you watch Miles Sanders, he's more of you know, run and swing routes and, you know, maybe a wheel route here and there down the field. But, you know, nothing close in terms of being able to consistently win, you know, one-on-one against man coverage. It, even against linebackers, often struggles to create separation. You know, his production in the passing game tended to be from schemed looks where, you know, you really have other guys in the route combination creating those opportunities. And Doug Peterson's really good at that. So that'll continue. But he's not going to be, in my opinion, I would be surprised if he ascends into that McCaffrey level. I mean, I would be shocked, honestly, as a receiver. So I think the hype there where he's going in first round in terms of, like, dynasty formats is a bit overblown.
Yeah, I mean, I really just think it's a volume issue. It's going to come down to a volume issue. Even if he's everything that you would expect, whether or not he gets the full workload, I think is still in discussion. Boston Scott was good when he played last year. Now, we haven't seen really any major additions to that Philadelphia offense in terms of competition in the backfield, but there is still some talent there. And so I just don't know whether or not we're going to see this full workload that everybody's wanting from Miles Sanders this year to really propel him into that next level of awesomeness, as you said, with Christian McCaffrey. Just looking at the offensive line in Philadelphia, Pro Football Outsiders adjusted line yards, they're 14th in the league. So it's an average offensive line. It's just not necessarily the elite status anywhere that we would assume from a guy that's being drafted as highly as he is right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they lost Brandon Brooks, all-pro guard, to a torn Achilles. And I think for me, you know, I'm a big, especially in dynasty formats, I really focus on the talent because you see it consistently, the talent earns opportunity. You know, if a guy is not Christian McCaffrey, you tend not to get a Christian McCaffrey workload. So those guys are pretty rare, and I haven't seen from Miles Sanders the things that I need to see to be convinced that he's going to earn those opportunities going forward, even if the plan is to have that this year. You know, last year they started out the first two games of the year, he was out-snapping Jordan Howard by about 30%. You know, weeks two or three through nine after that, Jordan Howard actually out-snapped him by a wide margin, out-carried him, out-produced him on the ground. Howard got hurt, Sanders took over, but then we saw Boston Scott, as you mentioned, working his way in, and Sanders was losing some work to him. So we have yet to see, you know, even the ability to hold off, you know, an undrafted free agent, or I guess a sixth-round pick Boston Scott was, for consistent playing time. So I'm not convinced that even if they want to give him a bell cow role, which, you know, Deuce Staley, their running back coach, hinted at this year, that he'll be able to hold on to that role unless he progresses substantially as a runner.
Absolutely. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. There you have it from the horse's mouth himself. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Mr. Jay Moyer. I really, really did appreciate it. Those listening out there, please go ahead and go to the Dynasty Diagnostic podcast feed on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating and review. It really helps the podcast grow and reach more listeners. Please be sure to check out our Patreon. You can find at Dino Diagnostic on Twitter. You can find a link directly to our Patreon, as well as our store, nv.com store, FF Pod Shirt store. It's Dynasty Outhouse's store. You know who Dynasty Outhouse is. He's going ahead and making sure that with every purchase, a portion of the proceeds go ahead and go to Fantasy Cares. You can find all the Dynasty Diagnostic merch you can handle there. And thank you for making it to the Dynasty Diagnostic Service Center today. Please be sure to keep up with your scheduled maintenance to ensure quality performance. See you on your next visit. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty. Diagnostic popped it, now your team is the topic. Aton and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, it is rolling a roll that I'm told, come a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get all of these stains on my seats, yeah.
Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty. Diagnostic, gnostic, gnostic, gnostic.